A warm welcome to you and thank you for joining us for this ICEP podcast. I am Goodman Sbero, the ICEP Global Scientific Advisor and your host. You can find me on LinkedIn and all the socials at the handle Prof. G. Sbero. You can find ICEP on LinkedIn, X, and Blue Sky. Just type in ICEP and you'll find us easily. ICEP, the International Society for Substance Use Professionals, is a global membership organization supporting the substance use prevention, treatment, recovery, and harm reduction workforce. With over 42,000 members, ICEP connects professionals worldwide, sharing evidence-based resources, training, and networking opportunities. Membership is free, so visit us at ICEP.net to join and access webinars, events, and a wealth of useful training and knowledge share materials. This is the first of a series of four podcasts focused on motivational interviewing, which is really a way of having conversations that helps people find their own reasons and internal motivation for change. It's not about pushing or persuading, but about listening, guiding, and drawing out motivation from within. In this episode, we're talking about how motivational interviewing works and why it's become a go-to tool in everything from addiction support to healthcare and beyond. We're honored to welcome Professor Steve Rolnick to walk this journey with us. Professor Steve Rolnick is a clinical psychologist and one of the co-founders of Motivational Interviewing, a really practical, person-centered approach to helping people make meaningful changes in their lives. Originally from South Africa, he's now based in Cardiff University and has spent years working across healthcare, education, and even sport, training people around the world. He's also written some of the go-to books on motivational interviewing and stays focused on how good communication can make a real difference. So today in this, our introductory podcast, we'll get to know Professor Rolnick and understand the journey that led to the development of motivational interviewing. We hope you enjoy this conversation and that you gain some new perspective and maybe even draw some inspiration. Steve, hello.
Man, greetings to you, man. Lovely to see you.
It's wonderful to be in touch with you again. It's been a long time. Have you been well?
Yeah, no, I'm doing fine and looking forward to seeing you in person when I get out to South Africa next.
I can't wait, Steve. I think just to get things going for the listeners, we're going to just let you get a piece of us and let you get to know us a little bit. So I'm going to ask Steve a few questions so that you better have a better sense of who he is. And he might ask me a couple of questions. I'm a bit nervous, Steve. Please be take it easy on me. Steve, just as a background, where does Steve come from? And so what's your professional background? How do you introduce yourself?
I'm retired now, but I started life growing up in Cape Town, South Africa. I developed an interest in addiction back then as a nurse and ended up as a clinical psychologist in the British National Health Service. And then in medical school here in Cardiff, Wales. And I guess, yeah, that's my professional background. And if there's a thread that runs right through the whole thing, Goodman, with the benefit of hindsight, I can say that thread was and is what makes for unhelpful and helpful conversations about conversations about change. And I think that's it.
That's such an interesting segue, Steve. I'm very curious about what made you start asking that question. What happened?
To be honest, I was a bewildered young nursing orderly working in Cape Town in an addiction treatment setting where I say bewildered because it felt very strong-willed of the treatment staff in the way they spoke about the patients they were looking after. I was bewildered by this. They were very strong-willed and clear and very ready to label patients as unmotivated and having this or that problem.
Did you go as far as saying paternalistic even?
Yeah, definitely. And there were a couple of incidents that sort of stood out, you know, as kind of very unfortunate and tragic consequences of, I think, people's lives. And these are the patients I'm talking about. And I felt in my heart they were connected to the treatment environment, not caused by, but I didn't see the treatment environment as helpful in that respect. Yeah, so these were some of my early experiences that I can't say I saw very clearly what was going on until I started training as a psychologist in the UK. And then I came across a paper by William Miller called Motivational Interviewing. It was in 1982. And I guess it turned things around for me it took me a while to absorb and realize the implications of that paper. But I guess that's what we're going to be talking about a bit more today.
Absolutely. You know, so before we get deeper into that, when we first connected, you told me you just come back from being with the cricket team. Maybe it'll be really good for the audience to know what you're up to now, because I'm quite keen to hear, you know, how did you end up here and how does this tie in with your evolving journey with motivational interviewing?
Yeah, look, I've retired. So for the last 10 years, I've been doing what I enjoy, but the thread continues. In other words, demanding tough conversations about change are being played out in the sporting arena. And so I'm enjoying working with elite sports people and sports coaches and doing quite a bit of work in the Premier League football world of the United Kingdom, mostly with coaches, but there they face the same difficulty. So just a week ago, Goodman, there I was in a Premier League run course for heads of coaching in the Premier League. And guess what they had in the form of simulations with actors? Well, it was, how do I have this tough conversation about change? For me, it's a single thread. But yes, I must say I'm enjoying retirement working in sport at the moment. And I'm also writing a book on giving advice for the lay person. So you can see I've broadened a little bit beyond the world of addiction treatment.
It's interesting, right? Because the concept of change and wanting to establish where someone is on a journey of change internally and trying to figure out how exactly to assist them in stepping forward is a universal one, isn't it? It's not just in the treatment space. It's not just in the interpersonal space. You're finding it working quite easily in the sporting space as well now.
Yeah, and you know, Goodman, don't know how to put this. In the sporting space, in a microcosm, you see what's happening in society at large, particularly in deprived circumstances. You get some quite toxic environments, okay? In sport, they become toxic for quite different reasons. But nevertheless, we're not talking about an individual change issue here. What we're talking about impacting people's well-being is the environment in which they're living and working in. Okay. And at the front end of that are these unfortunate demands to have tough conversations. So I think we, you know, we do well to retain awareness of the environment. And I think indeed when you and I get to talk about training in our discussions here, we'll notice that. We'll notice that.
Would you say that from the get-go, you've had this appreciation that the agent of change and the individual who must undergo the change journey exists within this environmental space that determines the outcome? Or is this something that's become more and more real for you over time?
Oh, no, it's been there from the beginning and a source of great frustration for me because, to be honest, there's a part of me that would have preferred to be a social worker or a social engineer rather than a psychologist. But that's just a personal preference of mine. But I had to, in order to survive, get a professional life and I became a psychologist. But yeah, I'm acutely aware of the impact of the environment on the way people behave. But, you know, speaking more optimistically, in the rather narrower worlds that we work in treatment environments and in sporting situations and in families and organizations and schools, I've seen the most incredible examples of good environments. You know, let's get that in balance. So I'm not in a state of hopelessness about this. I'm just pointing out that the way an environment is set up and the values that drive it will impact well-being and indeed the practice of motivational interviewing, which I'm sure we'll come on to.
Yes. And, you know, humor me here. How would you say your perspective on change, on motivational interviewing as a strategy, how has that evolved over time? Do you feel like it's evolved?
Yeah. Humor you. How can I humor you? It's like, I don't know. Yeah. And I don't want to sound too serious, but yeah, look, Goodman, there have been a couple of quite substantial changes for me. One is that I'm seeing motivational interviewing less as a form of therapy and more as a form of being helpful. And that's profound for me. The other more specific change, which I've, you know, been very conscious of and active in effecting, is that motivational interviewing is less focused on behavior change and more focused on personal growth than it used to be. So it used to focus on change indeed, in change in addictive behavior when we started out. But in the most recent work that we've done, the fourth edition of our textbook, we are talking about motivational interviewing being focused on personal growth and change. Okay. Now that is aligned with the first point I made, which is that what I've realized is that motivational interviewing is a form of being helpful. Okay. And that helpfulness can be applied not just to behavior change, but to people's personal growth. And that raises a whole lot of interesting and I think very exciting possibilities that motivational interviewing can be used way outside the treatment or therapeutic environment.
That's really great, Steve. I think when we speak in the next section about am I in practice, I'm really keen to get a bit deeper into that discussion.
Thing then.
I think perhaps my nearly final question for this section for you is, where would you like to see motivational interviewing go? Now, what's your dream for us? What's your dream for motivational interviewing?
It would be that in the treatment environments in which we work, people take seriously their own personal development and developing their own awareness of how they're feeling, how the person they're helping is feeling, and how the relationship is going. And if they do that, my dream would be that that will lead to them being more helpful. Yeah. And then I've got another dream, which is being realized in this book that I'm doing, which is that given that so much activity revolves around exchanging information, giving feedback, and giving advice to people, that's been seriously neglected. So I'm writing this book to try and realize this dream that we can quite easily improve the quality of giving advice and feedback to people. Because frankly, it's being done in a very unskillful and demeaning manner worldwide across all contexts. So there you go. But maybe...
So you're talking really about getting to a place where advice giving is not talking down or at people, but somehow relating to them on a deeper level where the advice actually is responsive to their exact needs and where they need to go.
Big difference. It's offered up, not dumped down. That offering up is simple. You see it being done. I'm not saying it's easy. And that's what I'm trying to write about at the moment. And there you go. I'm tempted to start asking you now, Goodman, what you've been up to. Like, yeah, I feel enough about me, Goodman. Do you mind if I switch the focus?
That's great, Steve. Yeah, look, I'm not retired just yet. So I'm still heading addiction psychiatry at the University of Cape Town.
Right.
And I've been very lucky to join the super dynamic team at ISOP Global. Of course, ISOP is the International Society for Substance Use Professionals. They're doing incredible work, Steve, to bring the network of providers of care in addiction together for information sharing, for knowledge sharing, for just connecting and working together and finding new and better ways to help people in serious need with addiction.
And so Are you a practicing psychiatrist, Goodman?
Goodness me, I have not seen a patient since 2012, but I have some incredible staff that take care of that at the university. Largely, my work has been around creating resources for capacity building, creating resources for technical assistance for government and non-governmental partners to be responsive to the drugs challenges that we face. Not just in Africa, but globally as well. So that's been my space, largely in management and largely in the development of resources and in bringing incredible minds such as yourselves together to further that mission.
But tell me, how does your experience of African and South African, I was going to say culture, but there's so many of them, how does your experience of living and working in, say, somewhere like South Africa, in and around the addictions field, how's that going to impact your work in ISSUP?
I think, you know, when you come from a space that has a limitation of resources, we know there's a real shortage of human resource as well as treatment facilities. So when you come from an environment like that, you're already automatically oriented towards thinking about how do you maximize the impact of the little that you have.
Yeah.
I think that certainly feeds into saying that the interventions and the strategies we develop need to be high impact and low resource oriented. as then when you go to spaces where there is more, you can achieve much more. But I think importantly, Steve, a lot of the interventions that are recommended at a global level are largely proven in spaces with a much, much higher income bracket, so sort of higher income countries, whereas the context that we come from is rather more low and middle income countries. So it becomes important that we test these interventions. And so what that means is that in our context, we have fertile ground for testing interventions and proving their efficacy, which is what we've done with a lot of interventions related to motivational interviewing.
I get you. I think I get you. And changes in your perspective?
In what sense, Dave?
I mean, you started off as a doctor, then a psychiatrist, and now you're moving into a more global sphere. Can you pinpoint changes in your perspective? I mean, since you asked me the question.
That's a very interesting question, Steve. I think, I see my life as a series of serendipitous moments. But at the same time, I think it's a question of acquiring the right skills to put you in the right room to take you to the next level. You know, when I studied medicine, my intention was to become a psychiatrist. And as I finished my psychiatry specialist training, I started asking questions like, why is it that we keep seeing these high readmission rates for patients with severe mental illness? That led me to start a study at the University of Cape Town with our good friend Dan Stein, which led to me asking more questions following those results, which led me to do a PhD. And when you do a PhD, you start working with policymakers and change makers at all sorts of levels. And you start realizing that the impact you can have is not limited to just the clinical space. And that sort of exposure started opening doors for me. And I think I've sort of fallen into it and been quite comfortable in the space. And I think that's really how it's evolved, Steve. It's just been one door after another. And I'm very happy to be at this door.
Yeah. And so your perspective, in one sense, has got wider and wider.
Absolutely. And I think that maybe that's the goal of assisting someone to make change, isn't it? Allowing them to see that if they put themselves in a position to be able to see that there are additional opportunities, their perspective can also widen and give them more hope.
It's an interesting link there.
Yeah. No, Steve, it's been
got
great
you.
To catch up again.
Okay.
And so do you have any closing words for me?
Just to thank you for this really interesting conversation, and I look forward to more.
Wonderful, Steve. Thank you for spending this time with us. We hope you enjoy that as much as we did. Be sure to hop on over to our website, isop.net, where you'll find information on how to sign up for free membership. Our website also has a wealth of resources and publications for you to browse and engage with, and hopefully be enriched by. You can also watch a recording of past webinars and podcasts and see future event listings. Take care and catch you on the next one.